It's time for On the Boardwalk's Artist Showcase, getting the answers straight from the beach music superstars.
And guys, this week's Artist Showcase, I can't believe I'm about to say this, he is a legend. He is an actor. He is a founding member of Tower of Power. He's a legendary national soul artist, Mr. Lenny Williams. Lenny, what's going on, man?
I'm doing pretty good, Justin. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. How's the weather over in Napa Valley, California right now?
Well, I woke up and there was a little rain, but looked like it stopped, and the gardener's out there in the yard doing some work, so I guess he's not going to let it stop him, and I'm not going to let it stop me. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. I tell you what, it hadn't stopped raining, it feels like, here in like 2 weeks, so I don't know what's going on. I guess North Carolina turned into Seattle, Washington or something.
Oh, wow. Well, I bet it's going to be a lot of beautiful greenery around there pretty soon, yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Well, man, I am so pumped to have you on the show, and I want to go ahead and get started. Guys, this is going to be a little longer than our usual artist showcase. I mean, it's Lenny Williams. So we're gonna talk with him about a bunch of great stuff. And one of the first things I want to ask Lenny is, man, the Mighty Tower of Power and all the stuff you did with them, I guess just if you could maybe run down a little bit about what you were doing before you even got into Tower of Power. Were you already into music for a while before, you know, Tower of Power got together? I guess what were some of your musical influences before Tower of Power even came about?
Well, yeah, I grew up in church, you know, so I was singing, you know, gospel songs. And, you know, of course, we'd listen to the radio, although my dad was like, yeah, you want us to listen to secular music very much. And so we'd kind of sneak and listen to that when he, you know, we'd watch the car turn the corner, boom, we'd turn on the radio, you know, and check out all the stuff. And then somebody'd be on the lookout, oh, here comes Dan, turn it over to the gospel music. And so, you know, doing that, and then I, you know, got in school, I was playing trumpet. So, you know, play all the classics and things like that in band. And then I got in junior high school, or what they call middle school now, and I started to venture out a little bit. My dad kind of lightened up, you know, somewhat. And, you know, just... you know, just hanging out with various people. I went to church, actually, you know, with the Hawkins family, Walter, Ed, Tremaine, the Stewart family, Sly Stone's family. And so there was a lot of music, and there were a lot of people who were kind of venturing out. One of the young ladies wound up doing something with, Paul Anka, right? She sang, had the song Having My Baby with Paul Anka. I can't think of her name right now. And, you know, so just kind of watching different people venture off to do certain things. And then I was in college. I must have been about 18, 19, somewhere around there. And they had a local talent show. So I went down to hang out at the local talent show and see if I could win the money at, you know, the assistance of one of my friends. And I won. And then I won the next week and the next week and the next week. And then finally, one night there was a guy there to ask me if I wanted to make a record, and then he took me over to a little small record company called Fantasy Records. And then I met John Fogerty, who had a group at that time called the Gollywogs. And then I started kind of really get interested in writing songs. I tried to write when I was about 14, but then I started to really pique my interest again in writing songs. And then I met Huey Lewis. He had a group called the Clover, I believe it was, right? And then hanging out with him and different people. And so I finally did a record. I wrote a song, and then John Fogerty wrote a song for me and did that. And so then one of my friends was like, well, when are you going to do a show? And I was like, oh, I don't know. You know, I don't have a band. So then she said, oh, the mailman, he manages bands. And so I met the mailman one day, and he invited me to go out to Fremont, California, which is a suburb of Oakland. And I met a little band called the Motown Soul Band, and half of them were in high school, and the other half were out of high, just recently out of high school. And so I said, this is not going to work because I want to play in clubs. You know, I think I had just turned 21. I want to play in clubs. And so I just put that on the back burner. Then I started hanging out with Larry Graham, who at that time was in Sly and the Family Stone. And I just kind of had met him on the street one day, you know, and so hooked up with him, and he was writing songs, and I was helping him write the songs. And he said, I need to put some horns on this stuff. Let me call this band Tower Power to come over. So they came over, and when they walked in the door, I recognized them as the little guys from the Motown Soul Band. So then we reunited. I started writing songs for the band, and then eventually became the lead singer of the band.
Wow, wow. And then you mentioned John Fogerty. Yeah, I saw that he had wrote some stuff for you, and that's just wild, man, with the Creedence Clearwater Revival back in those days. All this going on the West Coast. I noticed you were born in Little Rock, Arkansas, though. What moved you to Oakland, California? I mean, I saw that you moved there at a young age, but I guess what took you to the West Coast from Little Rock, Arkansas?
Well, my parents went, so I had to go. They didn't ask me to go.
That's right.
Yeah, they didn't say, well, what do you want to do, right? Yeah, yeah, so...
Well,
the trains are leaving, right?
That's right. That's right.
Well, you know, so they came out for a better opportunity, you know. That was in the 40s, yeah. So, you know, for, you know, a lot of people in the South were, you know, coming out, you know, especially, you know, black folks, you know, coming out to the West Coast, you know, and going up, you know, toward, you know, up north, or going up, you know, Chicago and different places like that. You know, so, you know, just part of that migration and, you know, so it served me well, yeah.
So when, you know, how long were you with Tower Power as the lead singer before you guys, like, really hit it big, especially with that first album? Or is that first album kind of put out, like, I've had other artists on that said, well, they kind of put it out and then hit the road, and then when they got back, they didn't realize, oh, wow, this album's blowing up, you know?
Well, I got in Tower Power officially at, I believe it was December of 72, and by the end of January or the beginning of February of 73, So Very Hard to Go was, you know, in the top five records here. Yeah.
And that's one of my, man, look, it's a classic. I love all Tower Power stuff, but I played it before I even brought you on. It is still, to this day, one of my favorite, not just Tower Power songs, but favorite songs ever made. And, man, you know, so give us a little more information about your run through Tower Power, you know, before you decide to go solo. You know, I know you guys would play all kinds of different TV shows. You were all over the place. You can just go on YouTube and find everything that you guys did. But what was it like just playing with, you know, that horn sound behind you? And I always call it the greatest horns in the land. And just the band as a whole with your vocals, those horns, your drummer was amazing. It was just, I mean, just the perfect mesh of musicians.
Right. Well, I mean, I played trumpet when I was in elementary school and junior high school as well, so it was kind of a natural fit for me, and you know, so I enjoyed the horns, and I even used to feel a little funny. They say, "Now, ladies and gentlemen, Tower Power," and you know, the band would come out, and then they play an instrumental, and then I would come out, you know, on the second song and start singing. So I was like, "Hey, I feel left out." So then I actually hadn't played trumpet in years, you know, maybe even a decade or something, and. And I got a trumpet from Mick Gillette, and he sold me his trumpet, and then I started practicing, and they would write out a, you know, kind of an easy part for me, and I'd play trumpet sometimes with the band, and so that was exciting. But, you know, the band was great. You know, we came off the hit record, So Very Hard to Go, and then But His Hip was on that record, and so, you know, you musicians loved us. We had a hit record, so, general public loved us, and we were just going around doing all types of shows, get a chance to, you know, just meet people I, you know, never thought I'd ever meet, various musicians and play at various, you know, legendary venues that I thought, you know, that I just, you know, you only dream about or you read about, and so it was exciting. The band, you know, we had a, the band was a huge drug band, you know, you know, we went all the way from smoking pot to, you know, shooting heroin. You know, it was, a lot of stuff going on at that time.
It was the 70s.
Yeah, it was the 70s, right, yeah. And so it's really interesting. You could always tell, I think we had one time, let's see, three guys mainlining heroin and a couple of others, you know, snorting it. And so you could always tell when the heroin boys scored, you know, because they'd be, "What is hip? Tell me, if you think you know, if you're really hip," you know, just slow down, you know, it's like, oh, we're in low gear right now, right? Yeah. And the David Garibaldi is back there just trying to, you know, keep the, you know, the beat up and everything like that. But it was an interesting time. But, you know, it's really interesting. I don't know, maybe... God, maybe 18 years ago or something, the local radio station out here, KBLX, they had a summer jam, and they had me on the show and Tower Power on the show, and we appeared individually. I had my band, and they appeared, and then at the last minute, the program director was like, "Well, can you guys do something together?" And it was like, I said, "I don't really have time to rehearse because I'm, coming to town." So Emilio Castillo asked me, "Well, do you still sing everything in the same key?" I'm like, "Yeah." And he said, "We do this thing with Don't Change Horses, but we kind of slow down a little bit or something after the second verse. But, just keep your eyes and ears open." So, we're getting ready to go on stage, and the guys in the band, they all get around, they hold hands, and they started praying, right? I was like, "Oh, this is not the Tower of Power I know." It's like, we're getting ready to go on stage. Somebody's over here smoking pot. Somebody's dropping pills. Somebody's snorting. Somebody's hitting up, and it's like, so it's just really good to know that, all those guys, that the ones that are still alive, that they, finally, turned life around, and, everything is good.
Yeah, the evolution of music, man, it really is. But, let's fast forward to 1975. You leave the Tower of Power, and for a short time, you were signed with Motown Records. How did that come about?
Well, I asked to leave. I left the band. I left the band actually because of drugs. We were over in Germany, and one of the guys went through customs and snuck some stuff in, and I was like, "Okay, that's it. I gotta go."
Oh, yeah.
Like, I called up, a cousin or just a lawyer or somebody in the United States or whatever, but, over in, foreign country, I can't deal with, right? So I left. And so I was working on an album while I was with the band. And so I just took it to Motown. And I was going to sign with ABC Records. I had the deal going with them. And then my lawyer and Otis Smith over there who was the vice president in charge of Rhythm and Blues, they didn't get along. And so my lawyer's like, "Well, come down Monday. You're signing a deal. Him and my manager, you're signing a deal. We don't know if it's going to be ABC or whatever, but we got, so I get down there Monday, and they had put together this quick deal with Motown. And so I went over to Motown, and I already had the album finished. And I gave it to them, and it was an interesting experience, getting a chance to, the hallowed halls of Motown and everything like that, and going to legendary studios over there, just hanging out. But it didn't work, I guess they didn't have anything to really do with the record, and so they kind of sent it through normal channels, but I'm not blaming the fact that the record didn't sell on them. I'll take the blame for that. And so it didn't sell. And then I wound up leaving Motown and going over to ABC. So that's how that happened. And I went to ABC and then started having hits, yeah.
And then that was 1977. But, there was one song, like I said, guys, in this interview, we're going to go a lot different than our usual artist showcase. We're going to play some songs, and Lenny's going to hang with us for a little while. But there's one song I'm about to play here in a minute that you came on and did an interview with our own Alan Vick, also a DJ on this Beach Boogie and Blues radio station. And there is a song that me and you talked about at the beginning of the week when we were talking about this interview, 10 Ways of Loving You. You've never performed it live.
Never have, and never have.
Right? That is wild, because that is one of the biggest songs in beach music, probably one of the biggest ever, man. People love that song.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I actually did a show down in South Carolina, I believe it was, in South Carolina.
Probably Myrtle Beach area.
Yeah, it was some kind of festival they have down there, and it's some little small town that's all black town, and they do this thing of, I guess it's around the slave, where they had old houses where, slaves lived and stuff like that. And so they had a band. It was a beach band, right? Integrated band. And, they opened up the I did my show, and then they were going to play all the dance music after, right? And they said, "Lenny, you want to sing 10 Ways of Loving You with us?" And then I was like, I was tempted to do it, but I didn't after I get past the first part of the second verse, I forgot the lyrics, right? And so it's like, I don't want to go up there and embarrass myself. Like, I said, oh, come on, Lenny, come on.
Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not. Otherwise, get halfway through the song and start stuttering. Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk about that a little bit more after the song plays itself. Lenny, hang on the line for me. Guys, you're in the middle of the Artist Showcase featuring the legendary Lenny Williams, and this is 10 Ways of Loving You. Lenny, hang on the line for me.
Okay.
Broadcasting from the Brian West Jewelers Studio, this is WNCT-AM Greenville, WELS-FM Kinston, WAVQ-AM Jacksonville, WYKS-HD2, W239-BC Greenville, W290-CB Winterville, W266-AV Jacksonville, W238-CF Jacksonville. All that legal mess adds up to one great radio station, BeachBoogieAndBlues.com.
Guys, we're in the middle of the Artist Showcase, sponsored by Tammy Harris Farm Bureau Insurance, and we still have the legend himself, Mr. Lenny Williams, online. Lenny, we were talking off the air, and I'm going to let you explain that a little bit, what we talked about. And the question I asked for you to explain that was, what year did you write 10 Ways of Loving You?
Yeah, I believe it was in the 80s. I wasn't on a label or anything like that, and I met this guy, Fred Pittman, who used to be a singer, and he had the good fortune of having a small label over at Fantasy Records, and we kind of met. And so he was asking me, that was the boss, my wife, who wanted to know where I was, right? It's like during this COVID there, she put me to work.
And it is Valentine's weekend, so tell her thank you so much for allowing us to steal you for a little while.
Yes, right. And so I met him, and he was like, well, I want to do a record with you. And so it was real interesting. I was working on the song, and I felt like it needed something. So my friend Preston Glass, who was working with Norton Michael Walter, they were doing Aretha Franklin, Whitney Houston, you just name it. They were doing all these records on all these people, right? And so I said, well, just give me a couple of hours. He said, well, that's all I got is a couple of hours. I'll come over and I'll help you. And he helped me finish writing it and helped me, produce it. And so, and we really didn't put a lot of promotion behind it. And, next thing I know, it probably could have been a big hit for me, but while we were while you were playing the record, I was thinking about it. During that time period, I had three young daughters, and I'd take them to school every day, and I'd sing these, I just make up nursery rhymes to amuse them, right? Trying to take them to school, and they're waking up and just having breakfast, and I just want to amuse them, on the drive, and I'd make up different songs about them. So I think that's the reason why I was saying 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because I was just kind of like into that nursery rhyme groove, and it's so simple in a way, but yet it resonates with adults as well,
And it's teaching kids how to count.
Exactly right. Yeah,
that might be how I learned how to count to 10. the funny thing was, like I told you, that song absolutely caught fire here. Whether you put promotion behind it, wherever you were at the time or not, it caught fire here. And like I was telling you. So almost every beach band can say they have either played it in their set before or they still continue to play it in their set. And like I said, it's absolutely huge over here. And
I'm going to have to learn it and come down and sing it there, right?
Yes, man. I'll be there. You let me know when you're coming. I'm going to be there. But I did want to tell you, like I said, we got to kind of fast forward a little bit because I could talk to you the rest of the show. And we're going to probably have to do a part two of this. But I want to kind of jump forward even to today. You're still making music. I know you did some acting and stuff too. But you're still making music on your solo career. And you actually had an album come out. Was it 2019 or 2020? I think it was 2020, right?
I think it was 2020. Yeah. Yes.
So, I guess during the pandemic, you stayed busy as well.
Yeah, actually, my wife got together with a good friend of mine that I'm writing a lot of songs with, Levi Caesar, who was actually the bass player and the guitar player in Prince's New Power Generation band.
Wow.
And so, unbeknownst to me, she got with him, and I come home one day, and I've got a studio in my house, right? They surprised me. And so that's been really nice. So now I can actually, instead of going, over to my friend's house or renting a studio, I can do a lot of stuff right here. So it's been exciting. And, so I'm just still writing songs and trying to come up with little ditties, as they say. Yeah.
Yeah, and so are you still, let me ask you, sir, were you still performing before the pandemic and everything? Were you still doing live
shows? Oh, yeah.
Okay. So do you have anything planned? Do you have anything planned for whenever this stuff will end? I mean, do you have a little tour coming on, or are you going to ramp it back up?
I get called every week, you know, to come out and do things, but I haven't, you know, I haven't done anything, you know, so, and I haven't accepted anything during the COVID period. So my last show was down in Dallas, March 7th of last year. And so I would imagine that once, you know, the green light comes on and everybody's feeling comfortable, then I feel comfortable, you know, having, you know, my fans come out and everything like that, that we'll put something together. Yeah. But I do have, you know, people calling, trying to get me to do shows. I was, you know, basically for the last 3 or 4, 5 years, I've been working just about every weekend somewhere. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, so it's awesome. You're still making music. It's crazy. So one song I want to play that I really liked off the new album, I was listening through it and I love Southern Girl. Tell us a little bit about that single that came off the album that came out in 2020.
Yeah, well, I was hanging out with Levi Caesar, the kid that played with Prince, right? And so I grew up with his family. Matter of fact, his aunt, Dorothy Morrison, was the original singer on Oh Happy Day with Ed Hawkins, Edmund Hawkins Choir, right? And so I grew up with his aunts and uncles, his mom. I had never really met him. I probably saw him when he was a kid, so hanging out with him one day. And I was asking him, was he familiar with Southern soul music? And he was like, well, not really. So I gave him a bunch of artists to listen to, right? You know, and he listened and then, and so he's like, oh, okay. I kind of got it. You know, he said, so then we came up with Southern Girl, you know, it's like, well, what do you like about the South? He's asking me, I said, well, I love the food. I love Southern people. And oh yeah, I love Southern girls. Right. And, and so we just, bam, you know, just sit down and put it together. Yeah.
And you're right about the food. I like to eat. I'm a big guy. So I like to eat the Southern food. You can't beat it, man.
No, somebody still living over here
in the South, you can't beat it.
Well, Lenny, I love that Southern food. Yeah.
It's great stuff, man. Well, guys, we are not done with Lenny. We're going to hit this song. We're going to hit a break. He's going to come back and do one more segment with us because we got to talk to him about something else. Because it is Valentine's weekend. There's a big song he made that we're going to talk about in just a little bit. Lenny, hang on the line for me. Everybody else, this is brand new from Lenny Williams. Came out on an album last year. Here's Southern Girl.
Yeah, yeah.
Another Tower of Power classic right there. That is What Is Hip from the Mighty Tower of Power. We still have the one and only Lenny Williams on the line with us. Lenny, I'll tell you, man, we want to talk about something because this is our Valentine's edition here on our show today. And you basically wrote one of the greatest love songs ever. 'Cause I Love You has been voted one of the greatest love songs ever. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what started you writing that and what year that happened and how that all came about for that song.
Yeah, I was had a house over in Oakland and getting some work done on it. And so this carpenter guy, he was there and he was telling me about his son. My son can dance, he can sing, he plays guitar, plays piano, and you know, and I'm like, yeah, everybody loves their kids, right? You know, and you know, my son strikes out every time, you know, he gets to the plate with us. He's a great baseball player, right? Yeah,
right.
So yeah, so finally I relented and I wanted to, you know, meet his son, and he turned out to be exactly everything his dad said. So we started writing songs, and he told me one day that he has to have inspiration to write, and I was like, well, you know, we're in Motown. Those guys just go to work, you know, like a regular job, and they punch in, and they sit around in a room or whatever, a corner, and they write all day, and Barry Gordy comes through and checks out, see what they got. Oh, this is a good one, you know, whatever. And I said, so I don't, you know, I understand inspiration because I need it too, but if, you know, if we were at Motown, you know, we'd have, you know, it'd be like a job, and, you know, Barry wants to see what's going on, you know, every day he wants something. And so I got him to buy into that theory. And so he came by, you know, for our usual writing session. We write every day. And I was like, I don't really feel like it. And he's like, why? And I was like, because me and my girl got into it last night, and I'm just not into it. He says, well, would you tell Barry Gordy that? And I was like, no. He said, well, come on. So he inspired me. We went and sat down to the piano, and, yeah, you know, out came, you know, and you know, that's how it all started. Yeah.
That's one of those starts of a song. As soon as you hear it, you know exactly what it is.
Exactly.
And like, I want to talk to you about something here in a second also, but you know, the guy that says this and what we're going to talk about in a minute, he's right. You basically, there's times you're like crying through that song, man. You put so much emotion in that tune. It is ridiculous.
And a lot of times, you know, people ask me about the emotion, you know, so part of it was because of what I was feeling at that time, you know, and remembering, you know, the incident that caused me to write it. But the day that I sang that song, my producer, Frank Wilson, said, oh, I talked to Andre Crouch last night, and him and his sister, they want to come by and check you out at the studio today. So while I'm singing that song, Andre Crouch and his sister, Sandra, looking down my throat, right? Yeah, and so, so I'm like, I've got one of the greatest gospel singers alive, you know, watching me. I got to put some passion in there. I got to make him, you know, say hallelujah or whatever. So I was really trying to get Andre Crouch's attention, too, that day.
Well, I'm so glad he was there.
Yeah, me too.
When you hear this song, that's the song you turn around and look at somebody you're listening to it with and go, man, Lenny was a bad man. And I tell you, you know, we talked about the royalty checks you would have coming in because of this guy. So we're going to go back 21 years ago.
Okay.
Most people know this guy from The Family Feud, but he had his own TV show, and he also was a stand-up comedian, and there was a show that I loved when I was in high school called, it was actually a movie, it was called The Original Kings of Comedy. Cedric Entertainer, Bernie Mac, there was J.L. Hughley, I think, was on that.
Yes.
And then Steve Harvey was the host, where he would come out and do these segments, and one segment involved you. When is the first time you did, first of all, since that movie was going to be released, my question always has been, or wanted to ask you was, did they call and say, hey, we're going to do this in the movie? Or were you just watching that one day, or somebody called you one day that was watching and said, hey, you're in this movie?
Well, what happened was a friend of mine called me from Memphis, Tennessee, and she said, oh, I went to see the Kings of Comedy last night. She told me who was, you know, performing, the Steve Harvey, Cedric the Entertainer, Bernie Mac, and D.L. Hughley, right? She says, and Steve Harvey does this whole skit on your song called I Love You, right? I said, oh, cool, right? And so then other people started calling me and telling me about it, you know, about the live show. So I had no idea that they were doing the movie. And then finally the movie comes out, and sure enough, my song is in the movie. You know, people called me. So my wife and I went, and we watched it, and we watched the whole routine that Steve did. And then it's like everybody started leaving once the movie was over. So my wife and I were like, I said, no, I'm not leaving. I want to see the credits, right? So the credits started rolling. And then finally it says, Lenny, you know, Cause I Love You, sung by Lenny Williams. And then it had my publishing company down there, Lin-Lon Music. And it's like, oh, my God. I was just like, and that came at a time period when my career had kind of, you know, careers have ebb and flow sometime, right? And, you know, it was one of those times when the tide was out, you know, and so it just really just kind of, you know, made me,
it was
a lot of inspiration, like, yeah, I mean, a lot of inspiration, like, oh, my work has paid off, you know, this song is 20 years old, and it's, you know, it's still there. I hung on to my writing royalties and my publishing royalties, and I'm getting ready to get paid, you know, and so it was just, it was just, every time I see Steve Harvey, I have to hug him for about 20 minutes. He's let me go, Lenny. I said, no, well, you got to hug you, Yeah.
Do you get a chance to see Steve Harvey often? I mean, I guess you guys still talk about that every time y'all see each other.
Yeah, right. I don't see him as much as I used to, but, you know, he does his neighborhood awards show and everything like that every year. But, you know, so he hasn't done it a couple of years now because of the COVID, but usually I go to that. And so, we run into each other, you know, they gave an award not too long ago, and they had me come and sing Cause I Love You, because it's so closely associated with him. And so that was, a real blessing. So every time I see him, I said, I got to hug you and kiss you, you know, because it just really was a big spark. And then once he did that, then all the kids started, you know, falling in love with the song, remembering their grandmothers and their mothers playing it, and Kanye West, him and the rapper Twista sampled it, and then I was like, oh, my God, you know, my wife will call me and tell me, oh, you got something from you know, Sony, and it's like, it looks like a royalty check, but it's like as thick as an encyclopedia. So I'm rushing to get home, and you know, and you know, just I think I had two checks, you know, for you know, like about $94,000 a piece, you know, and then they just kept on coming, you know, one for writing and one for publishing. And at this time, I had three daughters in college, right? So I needed the money, you know, and yeah, I mean, you know, it was like, you know, and then one of them had the nerve to go to an Ivy League school. It's like, why can't you just go to a, you know?
So basically, Steve Harvey. Right? Yeah. Steve Harvey, Kanye, and Twista basically helped you get your kids through college.
He helped me get my kids through school, right? Get them out.
That's
without,
awesome.
You know, any student loans and anything like that. Yeah. So, so it was, you know, just been a blessing. Yeah, that song has been a blessing to me and my family.
Well, that is great. We're going to play around, Lenny. First of all, before I let you go, man, I was so honored to have you on. This was a blast. Thank you so much. Before I do let you go, though, if you want to plug any websites, social media, or anything, please tell us about those. How they can get that new music and also see when tours start kicking back up where they can go see you live.
Exactly right. So you just go to LennyWilliams.com and you know that's my website, and you know, I'm on it all day right now with this COVID, and I answer people and you know interact, and then also I'm on Twitter and also on Instagram, so you know you can find me all over, and you know my music is on all the platforms, all the digital platforms out there. And I really appreciate you having me on today, and it's been an awesome conversation, and anytime you need me, you know, let me know, and I'll be there. Justin, thank you so much for being so professional.
Hey, thank you, brother, and like I said, man, yes, we will be having you back on the show. Everybody else, here's Cause I Love You from Lenny Williams. Lenny, hang on the line for me. Thanks again, my man.
Such yes, sir. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody.
That's right. Valentine's edition is 'Cause I Love You, Lenny Williams.